Welcome back to Hockey This Morning.
And the first gold medals in the history of Olympic women's hockey go to the women of Team USA.
With Mike Ross and Mick Kern.
I'm sick and tired hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your turn. Now go up there and take it.
On NHL Home Ice.
Ah, the kid pulling off his Herb Brooks impression. It went viral. And, in fact, at the Ottawa-Edmonton game last weekend, they played that as they went to overtime. This is our time. It's not their time.
All right.
And a guy who would be very familiar with all that, and in fact, all things USA Hockey over many, many years. He's the executive director of USA Hockey, Dave Ogrian, who joins us now. How you doing, Dave?
Good morning, guys. You know, I wonder if that kid's ever been kicked out of school. I hope he doesn't talk like that to his dad.
I would pay to see that, I tells you.
Yeah.
I pointed out because some folks out there may not know that you were there in 1980 and part of the communications team for Team USA.
Yeah, it's the organization has come a long way, I'll tell you. I know you spoke to Walter Bush yesterday morning, and, you know, he's an amazing, amazing guy. But when I was first hired here back in 1978, our staff was four people. I have no idea what the budget was, but it certainly couldn't have been very big. And, of course, we had no idea at that time what was going to happen less than 2 years later in Lake Placid. So that was quite a special time, and it left an indelible impression on me. And I'm very, very fortunate to have been able to, you know, come back to this organization a couple of times.
Let me ask you, when because so many of us saw the movie Miracle in 2004 and yep. And a great performance by Kurt Russell. But having been there, how close was it to the real thing? And from a guy who was there and saw it, how much of it was Hollywood? How much of it was real life?
Well, there's always a touch of Hollywood because you can't, you know, I mean, Kurt Russell is a well-known actor. And so you look at Kurt Russell, and I think he did an amazing job playing Herb Brooks. And even Danny Brooks, Herb's son, said, you know, he was a better Herb than Herb sometimes. But I will tell you this. There was a really poor made-for-TV movie made about a year after Lake Placid. I think it was on ABC.
Carl Malden
and played
yeah,
Brooks.
Yeah.
That movie was really, I thought, rather pathetic. Miracle was very, very good. And you know, those of us who were involved probably nitpick. But the two exceptions that I would have with the film were that the Craig Patrick character was made out to be too much of a buffoon. You know, Craig was so vital to the operation of that team. Not only was he the assistant general manager and the assistant coach, but he was also the alter ego to Herb. You know, and Herb could be with most of the players the heavy, and then Craig was the guy to whom they could go. And the two of them, Herb and Craig, played off each other very, very well. You know, Craig Patrick's a smart guy, and I thought that he didn't look as smart as he was and as clever and strategic as he was in that film. The only other literary license, I think, that was taken was the impression was very specifically given that Herb had the whole team picked in advance of the 1979 National Sports Festival. And that's not true. I think any coach who has followed a talent pool and putting a team together can probably pick the first 15 guys pretty easily, but it's those last five that make the world of difference. And, you know, with the input of a lot of the observers and other coaches who were there, including Tim Taylor, I know that the input that they provided to Herb were vital in coming up with the final selections. He made them, but at the same time, I think that process here in Colorado Springs in 1979 was, you know, sort of the linchpin to getting down to the final group of 26, and then Herb and the staff whittled that down to 20 before we went to Lake Placid.
Dave, you're crushing me. The afternoon that game happened in 1980, I didn't actually watch it live because I had band practice. You know, I was young and I was stupid. So the only way I caught up on it was the Carl Malden movie. So I think quite fondly of that movie. Thanks for crushing me there. That's
yeah.
how I learned about it. But.
Yeah. You know, there's so many people today that don't realize that game wasn't broadcast live.
That's right.
At least in the States.
It was here, I believe.
And it was one of those rare moments. We've seen some of them since, but it was the first time that I can remember, if you were watching your you know, early evening news and sportscast,
yep,
where the announcers would say, if you don't want to know the score,
that's
turn
right
down the sound or turn away from the set, because they knew that it was going to be broadcast in prime time. And, you know, it's very funny. For many, many years, even though that game was not live, it was the highest-rated Olympic broadcast, winter or summer, in the history of the games in the United States. It was finally eclipsed during the Kerrigan-Harding duel in figure skating in Lillehammer in 94.
Right.
But ABC attributed the good numbers in 1980 to the fact that it was the Russians that we beat, and the Cold War was still raging, and
sure,
we had hostages in Iran, and a lot of the country that was not in love with hockey was in love, excuse me, with patriotism and with the U.S. beating Russia. And they attribute the fact that a lot of people in the southern part of the country knew the score and turned on because they wanted to see Russia beat.
Sure. Well, that's why they show trailers as they do. They show you the whole movie. You get to know what you're getting ahead of time.
Yeah.
Further on this topic, Dave, it is definitely one of the, as you said, indelible, that's a good word, moments in U.S. Sports history, but just particularly hockey history. I get sick up here in Canada hearing about 1972 all the time, but I understand why it resonates forever. At what point do you sort of need, the U.S. movement needs another 1980? It'll never be the same conditions, we know that, but something that resonates the same sort of way. 1996, the World Cup, that was a big thing. If they had could have just scored that goal, which they came close to doing 2 years ago in the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, that would have been another big sort of signpost. Is hockey strong enough in the States that obviously it's going to continue on without one of these moments, but it helps, doesn't it, to sort of give another moment to a new generation that may go, you know, I wasn't born in 1980. That's my dad's or my mom's memory.
You're making me feel old.
Yeah.
The answer to your questions is yes and yes. I mean, 1980, some people look at it as an albatross because it's 32 years ago. But at the same time, it's sort of the Mount Everest for
sure
us. You know, it was the greatest moment in American hockey history. It's one we're enormously proud of. Some of the players on that team continue to be really iconic and very supportive figures of hockey in America, like Mike Ruzioni and Mark Johnson and Jim Craig and Ken Morrow and others. But at the same time, it also gives us something to continue to shoot for. And I think you're very, very correct that even if we, you know, when we do it again, you know, when we have our next Olympic gold medal, had we been able to pull off the victory in Vancouver in February 2010, it would have been spectacular, but it still wouldn't have been this. As a matter of fact, I've had many conversations over the years with players on the 1960 team that won the gold medal in Squaw Valley. And I think it irritates them sometimes that that achievement is so much lesser known. But it was a different time in terms of the world. You know, the Olympics was not as broadly seen. The Cold War maybe wasn't quite as animus. And, you know, 1980 is 1980. You know, it is a special time, and it can't be repeated. But gold medals are precious, and, you know, so any ones that you ever win, you cherish. And every time you go to a tournament, no matter whether it's a, you know, women's world under 18, whether it's an Olympic Games, gold is what you shoot for. And that's always how you measure yourself. And I suppose you're never satisfied unless you win all of them, and nobody can. So we keep shooting for it, and hopefully we'll have another crack and play at another gold medal game in 2 years.
Dave Ogrian, Executive Director of USA Hockey, is with us here as we celebrate Hockey Weekend across America. It's Wear Your Jersey Day, and Mick is wearing a St. Louis Blues jersey today. I've got my Brian Leetch Rangers jersey. There's a Red Wings jersey and a Caps jersey across the glass. And Dave, you talk about the goal being getting out there and winning gold medals. This is something that USA Hockey has done a lot of over the last several years. And we heard the clip right off the top of the women in Nagano in 1998. Give us just sort of an idea of the state of USA Hockey right now.
Well, I think it's very, very good. I think it's better than ever. And the reason it's better than ever, because of all of the work that's been done in the last 30 or 40 years. And there's a lot of people to credit that for. Certainly, once women's hockey was added to the Olympic program, that provided a real rocket boost for both of the countries in North America. And, you know, those duels continue to be U.S. and Canada duels. And, you know, those are the big games. As a matter of fact, if the women's game has an albatross, it is that anything that's not U.S. and Canada you know, is definitely not the same level of hockey. So we have the Women's Worlds coming up in Burlington, Vermont in April, and we're playing Canada right off the bat, and we expect to see them again in the gold medal game about a week later. But, you know, women's hockey has grown, and being in the Olympics and winning that first gold medal did a lot. On the men's side, it's a culmination of so many things over so many years and a lot of people who contributed to it. But I think that there was a sea change that occurred in the mid-90s when the vision was altered and our national team development program concept was born. There's a nice feature in USA Today this morning by Kevin, and I know you had him on earlier in the week, profiling Ron DiGregorio, who's our president. And he was really the catalyst and the driving force and the brainchild behind pushing for the creation of the National Team Development Program. Tons of credit to Jeff Jackson and Bob Mancini for being the architects of the design, and that design is significantly unchanged for the last 15 years now. But it was when we took that approach to bring together 46 of the best young players under 18 and put them in one place and put them through a rigorous training schedule, make sure they went to school every day, but have them play older players, national teams, international opponents, and really work them hard and try to put the best there. That is what has allowed us since that time to see this matriculation of more Americans into the National Hockey League and to see the medal results when we go to the World Juniors or the World Under-18s or the Olympic Games improve. So it was a significant investment, controversial at the time. I think it's been validated. I think that we always have to be looking at, should we do something differently now? What can we do better? You're never satisfied. Every time you have a hockey tournament and the tournament's done, you might win the gold medal, but you can never say, okay, we've arrived. It's over. It's never over because you got to go out and play another tournament again a month or two later and everybody starts from scratch. So, I think we're in good shape, but we're never going to be satisfied at the shape we're in, so we have to continue to, dare to find ways to be better and better.
Dave, you have an extensive background in marketing and media, and that's where I want to take this question. And you sort of touched upon it with the USA Today article. Over the years that you've been involved, have you noticed maybe a maturation on the part of the mainstream U.S. sports media as they cover hockey, whether it be NHL or Olympic or at whatever level? Or do you find it part of your duties or part of your experience has been some sort of frustration with getting the ESPNs and the Sports Illustrated and whoever else to give their due to hockey, understanding it'll never probably be on the same level with football and baseball,
right?
But have you seen a transition, maybe an evolution of coverage over the years?
Yes, I think evolution is the right word. I remember saying this to Gary Bettman several years ago. We don't need to try to be the NBA or to be Major League Baseball. What we need to try to do is to be the very, very best sport of hockey in the United States that we can. It is more popular today than it's ever been. It is seen by more people than have ever watched it. I think the media are more aware, better educated, more fair in their coverage than they've ever been. I think as it comes, when you speak about the print media, I think that there's certainly an increased awareness and an objectivity there. You can't get away on the electronic side from the fact that certain people have investments in certain leagues. And without ESPN covering the National Hockey League, I think it's simply axiomatic that the positioning of hockey on some of their other programming, including SportsCenter, isn't going to be at the same level as if they had a major contract covering NHL games. With the NBA back from their lockout, they've been bombarding, all of their different media outlets that ESPN owns, with coverage of the NBA. And they have a very big investment, in people watching the NBA. NBC has been marvelous, on the other hand, in terms of the attention that they pay to the sport of ice hockey. And now that Versus has morphed into NBC Sports Group, NHL games in particular are a very, very important part of the programming on NBC Sports Group, and they also are providing coverage to college hockey in the United States as well, as is CBS College Sports. So I think the exposure that the sport is getting in the U.S. is, I would characterize it like it is our chase for medals. It's better than it's ever been, but we're never satisfied.
Dave, thanks for being here this morning, and enjoy the 5th annual Hockey Weekend Across America. Hard to believe we're already 5 deep.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and I do want to give a shout-out to Dave Fisher, because when I came back here 6 years ago, I kind of hatched this idea, and I threw it on his desk and said, here, give it some life. And he really has grabbed it, and it's really been fun to see this thing grow, and we always appreciate being on with you guys.
Well, do say hi to Dave for us, and thank him for the great guests that he's provided us all through the week and allowing us to talk USA Hockey here with fans right across Canada and the U.S. Have a great weekend, Dave.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a million. You too.
Dave Ogreen, Executive Director of USA Hockey, as Hockey Weekend across America kicks off today. Wear your jersey day today. It's always a Jersey Friday around here, but it's got a special twist with Hockey Weekend across America, brought to you by ShopUSAHockey.com. Tomorrow is Try Hockey Day, sponsored by the NHL, and on Sunday, celebrate Local Hockey Heroes Day, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Responsible Sports, and NBC presenting Hockey Day in America. Two NHL games, a regional, a national game, and all kinds of stories throughout the day about hockey at every level.
I love it. And he's a good talker. Axiomatic. I had to look up that word. I have no idea. Taken for granted. Self-evident. I will now be using that word. I've learned something.